This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this. Support for This Morning with Gordon Deal comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Gordon. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump and Kim, face to face. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, March 9th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The White House says President Trump has accepted an invitation to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in what would be an unprecedented get-together.
The president signs tariffs on imported steel and aluminum, but indicates some countries will be spared.
The opioid crisis in America is bad and getting worse. For example, emergency room visits in Wisconsin have soared by 108%.
Scientists says cities battered by unwelcome airplane noise may get some relief if planes would slow down.
A lot of communities are having noise problems because precision navigation has put flights over particular houses over and over and over again. They get bombarded with it, and they think this may be a way to actually make life easier for people on the ground.
Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney on the new antidote for noisy airports. He's here in about 20 minutes. How about this development? President Trump has accepted an invitation to meet with North Korea leader Kim Jong-un. That said, there are obstacles to an agreement in which North Korea would drop its fast-growing nuclear program in exchange for security. Just last month, U.S. intelligence agencies predicted that Pyongyang would press ahead with more missile tests and would resist negotiating away its nukes. But yesterday, South Korea's National Security Advisor, Chung E-young, conveyed Mr. Kim's invitation to meet and noted that North Korea had promised to suspend nuclear and missile tests while it engages in talks.
I told President Trump that in our meeting, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is committed to denuclearization.
It would be the first time a sitting U.S. president has had a face-to-face with the leadership of that isolated country. If it happens, it would take place within the next couple of months at a location yet to be determined. More on that potential meeting from Jonathan Cheng, bureau chief for the Wall Street Journal in Seoul, South Korea. Jonathan, any reaction yet from the likes of Japan or China?
Well, I think Japan has been caught a little off guard by this. They've said that they're going to send Shinzo Abe to Washington as soon as possible to talk about what's gone on here and North Korea policy. And China has remained generally reticent, even though it has generally been pretty much in favor of talks with North Korea to try and get something resolved and try and dial down the tensions a little bit.
What about the pre-talks ahead of any meeting? What would they involve?
Well, I think it would be trying to get both sides closer together. Keep in mind how far apart the positions on North Korea, between North Korea and the U.S. are on nuclear, on the nuclear question. North Korea basically has been saying for the last few years that it would not give up its nuclear weapons under any condition. And of course, the U.S. position is that North Korea must give up its nuclear weapons no matter what. So on the face of it, it seems to be an irreconcilable kind of standoff here. And yet, this is what both sides are supposedly going to be talking about. And those lower-level talks is really where the action is going to take place. Mm-hmm. Typically, you see these summits arranged and agreed upon only after the two sides have worked things out at a lower level. And this time around, it appears that we're going to be doing things backwards. I don't think there's very much evidence that there has been any low-level talks here, which means that we're starting from scratch and on a very compressed time frame here.
I see that, yeah. Why would North Korea, by the way, come all this way with this nuclear program then suddenly say that it's might be willing to drop it?
Well, that's a great question. And I think there are a lot of people out there who are asking exactly the same question that you are and wondering whether or not this is anything more than a cynical ploy. These people will point to previous summits where the North Korean leader, I think in that case it was Kim Jong-un's father, said that he was willing to give up his nuclear weapons in exchange for a security guarantee, and none of those deals worked. Now, people will say, who defend North Korea will say that the U.S. didn't hold up its end of the bargain, but there are a lot of people who believe that North Korea cheated on those deals even as they made them because they had no intention of ever giving up these nuclear weapons. Mm. Then on the other side, there is a strong case to be made as well that sanctions have taken a bite on North Korea, that he's about to run out of U.S. dollars, and that's the currency that he needs to keep his economy running, and especially the elites, and that he needs to do something here, and maybe that's what it is. It's a move of desperation.
Mm. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal's Jonathan Chang. He's with us today from Seoul, South Korea, where he's the bureau chief, talking about President Trump agreeing to meet with North Korea leader Kim Jong-un. If a meeting does not happen, because the two sides are so far apart in what they want, could that mean further escalation of tensions between the two?
I think that's definitely a scenario that could take place. I think for sure if you have these issues sort of put out on the table and openly debated between the two, I mean behind closed doors, but openly between them, I think you're very quickly going to see the wide gap between the two sides, and I'm not sure how you bridge that. There are creative ways to do it, and diplomats are paid precisely for this. But still, there's a reason why the North Korea nuclear issue has been one of the most difficult and intractable issues for the last couple of decades.
Yeah. How significant would this be, by the way, a face-to-face?
I think it would be very significant. Keep in mind that North Korea has never had its leader meet a sitting U.S. president. Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter have both visited North Korea, but after they left office, Madeleine Albright visited North Korea when she was the Secretary of State, but never a president. And in fact, as far as we know, Kim Jong-un has never met a foreign head of state since taking power a little more than 5 years ago. So it would be meaningful on all of those levels, and it certainly would give us more insight into who he is as a man, because we don't have a whole lot right now.
Right. Well, I was just trying to think, too, if some sort of agreement were reached, what things would be like, say, with inspections, right? It's just so hard to be in that country as it is.
Yeah, that's one of the key questions. If your benchmark here is to say that they're going to stop developing their nuclear program altogether, then you're going to have to create some sort of regime where inspectors can come in anytime, anywhere, and take a look. And that's something that North Korea has never wanted to do, and for understandable reasons. No one wants another foreign country to be able to have that right. And if they don't agree to that, I don't see how you could possibly come to some sort of a deal on those terms. If you stick to something more modest, like they cannot test a nuclear weapon or a missile, that's easier to verify, but it's also much less valuable.
Thanks, Jonathan. The Wall Street Journal's Jonathan Chang with us today from Seoul, South Korea. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Look into any great business. Whether it's a manufacturer or a hotel, a store, school, or hospital. Look into each and every one of them and you'll find the same thing. Great people. At Kronos, we believe that great businesses are powered by great people. And with Kronos Workforce Solutions, we'll help you find them, keep them, and engage them. Learn more at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Welcome into Friday. President Trump has implemented his global tariffs on steel and aluminum. During a signing ceremony yesterday, he also indicated there would be more aggressive pressure on trading partners, especially against China. The president outlined his broader trade agenda, including rewriting existing U.S. pacts and a sweeping investigation of Chinese trade practices.
Our industries have been targeted for years and years, decades, in fact, by unfair foreign trade practices leading to the shuttered plants and mills, the laying off of millions of workers.
The president and aides had originally said no countries would be exempt from the 25% steel tariff or the 10% aluminum tariff, but now say a large number of countries could be spared. The Wall Street Journal says that's after a week of lobbying and counter threats from allies, as well as complaints from U.S. businesses, GOP members of Congress, and officials in his own administration. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Jordan, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Trump are to meet in person by May, an extraordinary overture after months of mutual hostility. News of the meeting was delivered by South Korean officials after talks with Trump at the White House. South Korea's National Security Advisor Chung Woo-young passed a message from Kim saying the North Korean leader is committed to denuclearization.
Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests.
Trump hailed great progress, but says sanctions will remain in place. China welcomed the development, saying the Korean Peninsula issue is heading in the right direction. 3 weeks after the deadly mass shooting at a Parkland high school, a gun control bill sits on the desk of Florida Governor Rick Scott. The measure would raise the minimum age to buy rifles from 18 to 21 and extend a three-day waiting period for handgun purchases to include long guns. It also would create a training program to enable school employees to carry handguns with a district's permission. Scott says he has to read the bill and talk with victims' families before making a decision. A Wall Street Journal analysis shows that weeks after Donald Trump was elected president, Russia-backed online trolls flooded social media to try to block Mitt Romney from securing a top job in the incoming administration. The operatives called the 2012 GOP presidential nominee, then a contender for Secretary of State, a two-headed snake and a globalist puppet, promoted a rally outside Trump Tower, and spread a petition to block Romney's appointment to the top diplomatic job, according to a review of now-deleted social media posts. The revelation comes alongside a report in The New Yorker that alleges the Kremlin pressured Trump to consider a candidate more favorable to Russian interests. Thanks to a rising stock market and property prices, Americans' wealth pushed further into record territory in the final 3 months of last year, hitting nearly $100 trillion. Household net worth, the value of all assets, such as stocks and real estate, minus liabilities like mortgage and credit card debt, rose more than $2 trillion. But analysts say the rate at which we're saving is troubling. The saving rate was 3.7% for 2017, down from nearly 6% in 2016.
Goodness.
Save, people, save.
This is, this is something you've been dealing with, right? These types of numbers for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Just it never seems to get better.
I know. I know.
Even with the economy, stable now.
Oh.
Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. An MIT scientist has discovered a simple way to battle the airplane noise that's become a major nuisance in several cities. Slow the planes down. But is it easier said than done? Here's Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney. Scott, set this up.
It turns out that today, a lot of aircraft noise actually comes from the airframe. You think of it as the whoosh, as the plane pushes through the air, and it's not engine noise. And so it turns out that airframe noise is highly dependent on speed, and what they found was the sweet spot for reducing noise was to climb out at 220 knots instead of 250 knots. That 30-knot reduction is about 35 miles per hour. And if you do that, you can both reduce the noise level and reduce how far it travels. And so a lot of communities are having noise problems because precision navigation has put flights over particular houses over and over and over again. They get bombarded with it, and they think this may be a way to actually make life easier for people on the ground.
Wow. So when would the plane actually be going slower, on takeoff and landing?
No, it would be the climb out. So you would take off normally. You have to take off. You have to hit a certain speed, depending on the airplane and the weight and the wind and all that. You got to hit your takeoff speed. You got to get in the air. And then there's this period where you clean up the airplane, you retract the flaps, the wheels come up, in modern jets, you literally just set the climb thrust, how hard the engines are going to work. And you do that until you hit about 10,000 feet. And across the country, across the world, there's a 250 knot speed limit below 10,000 feet. Everybody wants to go 250 knots. And that's worked great. Works for the airplanes. Doesn't work so well, it turns out, for people on the ground. If you can reduce that climb speed from 250 knots to 220 knots, you can reduce a lot of noise.
Wow. I think somebody pointed out in the story, it does burn more fuel, may cost you another 30 seconds or so. Will an airline try it?
It's really going to be up to the FAA because they set the speed limits. But it'll be interesting to see how airlines have been sort of cautiously cooperative. JetBlue is the largest carrier in Boston where this research was done. They're actually quite supportive of it. They think, yes, it will burn a little bit more fuel. We're talking about 7 to 10 gallons of gas of additional fuel burn. And because you're going slower, there will be, possibly fewer departures.
Thanks, Scott. Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney in Dallas. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for being with us. On this Friday, March 9, Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump agrees to meet with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Mr. Trump signs tariffs on steel and aluminum, but there will be exemptions. Frightening new stats from the CDC on opioid overdoses. Paralympic Winter Games begin today in South Korea. Martin Shkreli, known as Pharma Bro, could be sentenced today on securities fraud. 9th anniversary of the current bull market today, and the insults that Trump and Kim have traded over the past couple of years. That story in about 20 minutes. The February jobs report comes out today from the Labor Department. For a preview, here's Mark Hamrick, senior financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, how do you see it?
Well, let's begin with the broad brushstroke, and that is that the U.S. economy continues to really hum right along. I think we'll see steady jobs creation, and that's the expectation for the foreseeable future. The previous month, we had 200,000 jobs added. The unemployment rate is at 4.1%. And I think that we can basically duplicate that. The key question right now, Gordon, is what is the pace of wage growth? And we can all remember that as soon as we got that January jobs report, that really set off a selling spree on Wall Street that became quite painful and volatile at sometimes, because the pace of wage growth accelerated a year-over-year gain of 2.9%. That was not foreseen, and it was seen possibly ignite more inflation than expected and possibly prompting the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates more aggressively. So we're really going to zero in on that wage component in this employment report. Mind you, as we always want to caution, 1 month does not a trend make, but if we do see a trend that's developing that could change the interest rate outlook, that causes tension with stocks because we know that the stock market has been just really soaring over the last several years, yeah. And that puts it at some risk. It's obviously very good news for workers if we see more wage gains, because the lack of wage growth has been the most unsatisfying aspect of this 9-year-old economic expansion.
Is it possible then that wage growth is just catching up right now?
Well, it's making up for lost time, that's for sure, because income inequality continues to be an issue not only for the U.S. economy but also globally, meaning it's sort of a rich get richer and the poor get poorer part, and that actually also describes the plight of the middle class. That's not what is healthy for a democracy and stability in a political system, and it obviously isn't helpful for the economy in general. So, my sense is that the unemployment rate can dip into the mid 3% range in the course of the next year if nothing tremendously ominous occurs. And in fact, that ends up being the forecast also that we came up with in the sense of just completing our quarterly economic survey, and the economists there are looking for the unemployment rate over the next 12 months on average to dip to 3.8%, an average monthly jobs added 176,000, which again, quite remarkable for this stage in the expansion. Many people would have thought that would be impossible by this stage.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, previewing the February jobs report. It does seem like the actual unemployment rate is not even a number we pay attention to anymore. Right? We seem to be in this, I don't know, for correct my phrasing, like kind of a maxed out jobs economy. Wages are on the rise, right? Is that's not the focus here?
Well, it's a little like, is the patient needing to be monitored, or is that sort of a box that we've checked off? And certainly for Americans who are unemployed, they're not checking that box off. But in the sense of monitoring the economy's progress, we know that right now the path for unemployment does continue to seem to be lower. It is other metrics that we're watching more closely. But, you know, I do always want to say, Gordon, as often as possible, that, you know, these broad brushstroke headlines can sometimes generate some resentment on the part of some individuals because for those people that haven't been seeing wage gains, and we know that what I call middle America, but it could also be, you know, 70 miles outside or even within an urban area, you know, many people have not participated in the health of this economy, and so they are rightly frustrated when we're broadly speaking about improvement in the economy where they haven't been participating in that. So we want to caution to say, perhaps as sometimes disclosure goes with certain kinds of advertisements, your results may vary.
Who's hiring? Who's firing, by the way? Any noticeable trends we're anticipating?
Well, in terms of job cuts, we continue to see a steady pace there in the retail trade. But, you know, retail adds about 400,000 jobs a month. That's a lot, right? It's still a big sector. Many of those are entry-level jobs. And what we're really seeing there is a disruption, as we know, from online warehousing, distribution, and transportation, continuing to take some of those jobs away. Those are opportunities in that latter part. You know, my son's 26. He told me one day, living in California, that he got hungry one night and ordered a milkshake via Uber Eats, you know, so I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's an inefficient way to get a milkshake, but it gave somebody an opportunity to make a few bucks in delivering that.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, senior financial analyst at Bankrate.com. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, most of us get the sweats these days if we lose our phones for 5 minutes, but what if you were unable to access your phone for 5 decades? That's what happened to a woman in China whose phone will be locked for 47 years after her two-year-old repeatedly entered the wrong passcode to unlock the device. The woman explained to Chinese media that she left the iPhone with her son so that he could watch education videos. The son then accidentally activated the iPhone's security system, which extends the amount of time the device is locked every time a wrong passcode is entered. Mom came home to discover that her phone was disabled and unusable for over 25 million minutes, or about 47 years. Now, when she brought the phone to an Apple store in Shanghai, she was told that she could either wait till 2065 to unlock her phone or reboot the iPhone, which would erase all of the phone's data. She apparently chose the latter option, joking that she could, quote, couldn't really wait 47 years to tell my grandchild it was your father's mistake.
Ah, that's very good. Funny line. What about the iCloud?
Yeah.
Has she been backing up?
See, I have heard... I've heard about this before, that I've heard that if you enter the wrong passcode too many times, it locks your phone for a really long time. So I'm always super nervous. If I get it like wrong two or three times in a row, I get super nervous about doing something like this.
That was a thing like among my kids' friends a while back when they first got their phones. If they could grab somebody else's phone, they would deliberately enter the wrong password. I think the limit was 10 times.
Oh, okay.
Then the phone would be locked for like an hour.
Right.
You know, they thought that was funny.
So if it was an hour after 10 times, how many times did this 2-year-old kid have to do it
over and over again?
25
right.
million minutes. Right. It must have like exponentially jumped up or something like that.
And what kind of educational videos was he watching? How to lock your mom's phone for half a century?
Yeah, he obviously was not paying attention to those educational videos, for sure. Those were not holding his attention at all.
Oh, my.
And good news, Gordon, for equestrians who suddenly get a caffeine craving while on a ride. A Starbucks in Arizona Arizona has now allowed a teenage girl to order from the drive-thru while riding her horse, days after she was turned away. You might remember we told you the story earlier this week of 14-year-old Aspen Klein, who had planned with a friend to celebrate her birthday to ride their horses through the Starbucks drive-thru in Anthem to order a Frappuccino last Saturday. As they approached the drive-thru speaker to carry out what they believed to be a harmless surprise, a Starbucks employee informed them that they could not be served. After Aspen's mother posted about the incident on Facebook, Starbucks responded by saying that the employee was thinking from a safety perspective, but added animals such as horses are allowed to pass through the drive-thru under some circumstances. And after the story received national attention, a Starbucks district manager reached out and agreed to allow Aspen the opportunity to ride her horse through the drive-thru, which she finally did on Wednesday, for which she was very grateful.
What was the headline? Starbucks caves to whiny teenager? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I know you were not a big fan of this whole situation here.
Yeah.
About Starbucks, the employees having to scramble, having to answer questions about this, having this become a big, huge story. Her mom had threatened to actually boycott Starbucks over this whole thing.
I want to talk about me. I want to talk about I.
But the girl seems very appreciative.
All right.
So let's focus on her, not the mom who caused the incident.
It took a Starbucks district manager to step in.
Yes.
Not exactly. The manager of the store. No. They can't figure out themselves these days. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. The opioid crisis is bad and getting worse. The number of Americans turning up in emergency rooms suffering from opioid overdoses has risen sharply in recent years. A new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the size and scope of a devastating public health crisis is evolving in ways officials say is difficult to combat. Data released this week show emergency room visits for suspected opioid overdoses increased by 30% between July of 2016 and September of 2017. Rust Belt states have been hardest hit, with emergency room visits rising 108% in Wisconsin, 80% in Pennsylvania, and 65% in Illinois. Indiana and Ohio also experienced substantial growth in overdose treatments. The CDC says emergency room visits in large cities rose by 54% over the past year. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
According to South Korean officials, say President Trump has agreed to meet North Korean leader Kim Jong-un without preconditions by the end of May. Such a summit would be the first time sitting U.S. and North Korean leaders have ever met. News of the meeting came from South Korea's National Security Advisor Chung Wi-yong.
President Trump appreciated the briefing and said he would meet Kim Jong-un by May to achieve permanent denuclearization.
But even proponents of a diplomatic approach toward North Korea worry the administration could be rushing into a summit with little time to prepare. The European steel industry today condemned President Trump's decision to include them in tariffs, saying it will suffer significantly from the loss of one of its major export markets. House Speaker Paul Ryan is also concerned about the tariffs on steel and aluminum.
I actually think there is a better and more effective way to address unfair trade practices, and that is to go after those practices specifically.
Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona says he'll introduce a bill to block the tariffs. Flake called the tariffs a marriage of two lethal poisons to economic growth, protectionism, and uncertainty. A meeting in the Seychelles weeks before Donald Trump's inauguration between a Russian executive and a top Republican donor close to the Trump transition team has drawn the scrutiny of special counsel Robert Mueller. The Wall Street Journal says Mueller has heard testimony that appears to conflict with an account of the same meeting given earlier to a House investigators. During his stay in January of 2017, the donor, Eric Prince, met with a top Russian CEO who's close with President Vladimir Putin. It's been quite a while since we watched The Sopranos, the TV show, but we might soon get to see The Sopranos, the movie, Warner Brothers says New Line has bought a screenplay for the sequel to the popular HBO show. The screenplay is from Sopranos creator David Chase and takes a look at how the seeds of the Sopranos universe were planted in the 60s during the riots that engulfed Newark, New Jersey. No word on when the movie might come out, or perhaps the biggest question of all, who would play Tony Soprano?
Ooh, very good. Thank you, Jen. Oh, by the way, this gym class that we have today is a 12:15 yoga class.
Yeah.
I have not taken yoga before.
I'm going to show you up.
Is that the one that you take normally?
I do.
Now, do we share a mat since we know each other?
No, I'm going to be nowhere near you.
Right alongside each other?
No.
You could hold my hand like if I'm doing something wrong.
No.
6 minutes in front of the hour. With word this morning that President Trump may have a historic face-to-face meeting with North Korea leader Kim Jong-un, it's worth wondering if the two would bring up the insults that have been hurled back and forth between them. The New York Times dug up some of them. May 7, 2014, Mr. Trump referenced North Korea as the last place on earth I want to go. That was after Dennis Rodman visited North Korea and watched a basketball exhibition with Mr. Kim. September 16 of 2015, Mr. Trump at a Republican presidential debate called Mr. Kim a maniac. In February of 2016, Mr. Trump said, "This guy's a bad dude. Don't underestimate him." That was on CBS This Morning during the campaign. September of last year, Mr. Trump called Mr. Kim Rocket Man at an address to the United Nations General Assembly. 3 days later, Mr. Kim responded in kind, calling Mr. Trump a mentally deranged U.S. dotard. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.